Blog Talk Radio.
It just hung up on me. Here's what's going to happen.
I guess attention is the word of the day as technical difficulties slowly halted us there for a second. And I apologize for any fun things you may have heard before we come on. But we are here with the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. I am joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and also Mr. Reggie Walker. How are we doing, guys?
Doing great, Jeremy.
Doing good, Jeremy.
You guys got to see the more colorful side, I believe, of doing one of these fun shows. No, apparently
hey, man,
there are some technical difficulties, but I was able to finagle my way around them and make sure that the good people who tune into this show get to actually listen to this show. We got tons of awesome things going on. We'll talk about the 49ers falling apart, the wheels coming off the bus there. Ryan Mallett has a new home. Michael Sam has a new home. We make Super Bowl predictions. We pick four big matchups. Falcon Zone will be jam-packed. We'll talk about the game at Jacksonville and the Saints coming into town. We'll talk about who made the 53-man roster and all. But first, let's talk about Michael Sam. Now, since we left you last, Michael Sam was dropped from the St. Louis Rams squad. Or not really. Yeah, he was cut, so he was dropped. He was not signed to the practice squad, as we all kind of predicted that he wouldn't be. And the Montreal Alouettes reached out to him to see if somehow they own his contract rights. I'm not quite sure about that one yet either. I don't know that he ever got back with them. Also, as I predicted, I wish I could have came on here and said it at the time, the team that needs the most defensive help maybe just needs bodies on the field right now. The Dallas Cowboys did sign him after a physical and press conference to their practice squad. What do you guys think about this?
I think it was an excellent move by Jerry Jones. I mean, with the loss of DeMarcus Ware at the defensive end, I mean, it was no secret that they needed defensive end help. I think that he won't stay on the practice squad long. Because now that Jerry Jones has kind of made the move and softened the quote-unquote blow of signing him, I think you'll see other teams try to sign him off of the practice squad. And I've got a couple later on Falcon Zone that I want to talk about specifically. But that being said, I think it was a good move. I mean, the kid can play. He can play regardless of all of the talk about his sexual preference and all of that madness that have absolutely nothing to do with the game of football. The kid can flat-out play.
I concur, Reginald, that this kid can play football. Players play football. And I think now that all of the initial shock of him entering the league is beyond them now, I think now you have to look at the value that he can bring to a football team. And I don't think that Mr. Jones would have gone that direction with him, A, if he could not play, and B, if he did not need help immediately at that position. I think he's on the practice roster right now just to get to learn the different defenses. And once that's done, I think you will see him elevated if no one picks him up within, you know, prior to the first 4 weeks of the season?
Yeah, and I'm happy for Uncle Sam that he's getting the opportunity to play somewhere. We all knew St. Louis wasn't the best fit in the world. I won't call out the particular media member who said it, but, I mean, we have to look at the other side of this. I'm going to actually, for once, be on Jerry Jones' side here that this is a good business move for the Cowboys as well, not just for personnel involved, but the particular media person put out on Twitter, if Jerry can't sell Johnny Manziel jerseys, he might as well sell Michael Sam jerseys.
Well, you know what was interesting was that there was a statement made by, that came out of the Cowboys organization, that they were not going to sell his jerseys right now while he's on the practice squad. I think that's a brilliant move. I think short of Johnny Manziel, even during the preseason, he had the highest-selling jersey behind Johnny Manziel. So you're right. It is definitely a power business move in that regard if you choose to look at it that way. But from what I understand, they have declined on selling his jerseys as of right now. But, again, once he like as Coach mentioned, once he learns the playbook, I think we're going to see him elevated very quickly, just simply based off the fact that the kid can play the game. I mean, it's time for us to put all of these little crazy differences aside and start looking at things from a realistic perspective, and that is that he is a football player, regardless of whoever's in his bedroom.
Yeah, I'd also like to add to that, Reginald. I think that the maybe the mistake that St. Louis is making with not keeping him, they have two premier rush ends in Quinn and Long. But the problem there is that if one of those guys gets hurt, what do you have that can possibly fill in right now and be that same type of impact? And it's no question that Sam's proved that in the preseason. And I want people to understand something from a coach's perspective. This young man did it against the one. It wasn't like he was playing against diluted offenses. He was always out with the one, and he made impacts with the one. So, again, if they lose one of those guys during the season, I don't know if they have anybody else on their roster that can go and backfill for what they're going to need in an impact player.
Well, you know what, Coach, to that point, and that's a great point, I would like to offer this. I mean, and I don't, you know, I don't know Coach personally, but what I can confidently say is I do not believe that this was his position on Michael Sam. I think that this came from above him. I think if you look at some of the comments that he made in lieu of in the wake of cutting him and not signing him to the practice squad, they all suggested that he absolutely believed in the kid's ability, and it feels like it the decision to not sign him, re-sign him, whatever, came from above him. So I'd like to add that point as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Reggie. I think what Coach Fisher was saying in a subliminal type of way was that, and I think I might be quoting him, and forgive me if I'm quoting him wrong, and saying that he was a Michael Sam fan. And I think that was kind of what he was speaking out across the football world, that, yes, in spite of how you might personally feel, I'm telling you, as a professional in this business and as a coach, there is no question that he belongs here.
Yeah, I like I said, I'm happy that Michael Sam has a place where he has the potential to play. Jeff Fisher talked about that they have 9 people on their roster for that position, that he would have been number 10. That's just way too many to have on a team anyway. So, you know, we all hope the best for Michael Sam, and then it finally seems like a football decision for the most part. Not that the Rams wasn't a football decision, but he'll actually get the potential to play. I think he could do quite well in Dallas just because the bodies around him. And, you know, I guess we'll just have to wait and see how this plays out now.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
But we'll transition into, you know, we talked a little bit last week about the new domestic violence program. And your first offense is a 6-game suspension, followed by, if your second offense and hopefully nobody gets to this, is you're gone from the league. Well, within 2 or 3 days of that being put into place and agreed upon, we've already had our first potential violator, and that would be 49ers defensive lineman Ray McDonald, who was arrested for domestic violence, I believe, last weekend. If convicted of this, so far he's just charged. If convicted of this, he would serve the 6-game suspension. If he ever did it again, he would be expelled from the league. Are you guys surprised it didn't take long before somebody had potentially violated this?
I'm not surprised. I will say this, though. The only hitch in all of this is obviously you have got to allow the justice system to play out. And for the consequence of possibly incurring the same type of wrath that Stephen A. Smith incurred, I will hold my comments on that. But you know where I'm going with that. I mean, you just don't really know the circumstance if you weren't there. I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying that it is okay to put your hands on a woman. But what I am saying is that you have to understand the circumstances. And I think that may be the case with McDonald, is that they've just kind of got to figure out what's going on with this thing and see if you know, the rules apply. It's going to be interesting, though, to see if Mr. Goodell takes the same approach, where it's kind of no nonsense. We don't care what the rules are. It is what it is, which I fear that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I guess I'm up. from a coach's world, my concern with this is not that you have a policy in place because you need a policy in place. My concern with this is how does the policy apply and what terms and the levels of degree that this can be turned into, because I guess the biggest question here is how does the NFL define domestic violence? Now, one of the things I'm concerned with is, let's just say I have a player and I have noticed certain things, but I have not questioned this player about certain physical injuries that I see. Or let's just say I've witnessed things in the parking lot and situations like that where they might have been in each other's personal space, but there was no physical contact. The concern is, when does it become domestic violence based upon physical contact? If you have a player and his wife hauls off and slaps him, and out of reaction he turns around and pushes him, or any of those type of situations, I think what happens here with players and where they are really, really going to have to go over this with a fine-tooth comb is, what do you do when it's in defense of you? But when you walk up on the scene, you see this 130-pound young lady standing next to this 270-pound young man. And I think that, you know, if you say they pushed each other simultaneously, that can be considered domestic violence. So where in all the vast scheme of this do they clearly define what is going to be domestic violence? Is it based on the law outside of the NFL, or is it based internally with the NFL? That's the concern that I have with it right now.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at right now, is they're still trying to work out the kinks of this whole thing. And regardless if Ray McDonald is convicted, you know, it's clearly stated what happens now. And the Ray Rice camp and the Baltimore Ravens will realize they got away with one here. And kind of to transition into the 49ers, just the wheels coming off the bus kind of sort of, Alden Smith was suspended for the first 9 games for not only his substance violation that he had, but also for the, I believe it was the fake bomb threat at LAX. So it's been a combined 9-game suspension on this. With all the 49ers suspensions and injuries, do you guys see this team being the team it was last year? Can they rebound from this, or is Arizona going to emerge and take over that second spot?
Well, I think it's poetic justice, and you guys know who my favorite is, and that, you know, the Falcons kind of experienced something similar. It wasn't, you know, by way of suspension or things of that nature, but it was way by injury and key players being eliminated from participating. And I think that's what you're going to find with the 49ers, particularly on defense. is that now they get to understand. We get to see what the depth looks like on that team. I mean, now Coach Harbaugh is going to have to rely on the depth in that on that defense. But to that point, much like Josh Gordon as well as Alden Smith, I mean, I think that there has to be a new initiative within the NFL that starts to target and really take a close look at mental health. I mean, this is something that we've discussed on a political front and or has been discussed on a political front, not by us, but just in circles, as something that now has to be taken seriously. These kids are coming into the game. They're coming into the game being reveled as gods or revered as gods, and they no one is addressing their mental capacity. We've seen it with Brandon Marshall. We've seen it with Terrell Owens and numerous other players. And I think, you know, now is going to be the time now where you're going to start to see some of those tests that come into play even in the combine time, even before draft or pre-draft. As you're evaluating these kids, you're going to have to start taking a look at these things. But more importantly, you're going to have to start getting these kids some help. Because if it's chemical or if it's tragedy related, I mean, we can't continue to keep just leaving these kids out and suspending them 9 games or suspending them in a year's time in the case of Josh Gordon. We've got to do something. The NFL's got to do something about this.
I mean, I agree, Reginald. I think that you have to look at this, and one way the NFL could play this to their favor without a lot of backlash, in my personal opinion, would be that they can tie this into the concussion situations that they have right now.
Absolutely.
When you're looking at all these impact injuries and with the head right now, yes, right now, currently you're testing for the concussion, but what are you doing to extend beyond that for those who might not have suffered concussions or they might have suffered those concussions in college and not had many of them in the NFL right now? So all of this has to play a role in the overall health. You know, millions and millions upon millions of dollars are spent in keeping the body healthy, but then you have to have mental health as well as physical health as well.
So, and Coach, to that point, I mean, because I know that you do a lot of scouting at the coaching level for a lot of professional teams, I mean, does the college game currently have the type of concussion protocol that the NFL has? And if they don't, when now does this now accelerate that insertion into the NCAA program?
Well, that's a great question, Reginald. And I think that at one time it wasn't as in-depth as it was before, but since the situation with the NFL occurred and now you're starting to get this backfield with college players as well, their testing now is basically the same. I think concussion testing between, you know, NCAA and the NFL, there is no gap between that. But the question is now how many of those players have gone, you know, misdiagnosed with concussion, and they're going to face that same situation that the NFL has faced already. I think something like that is already on the table right now. It hasn't been spoken of openly by the NCAA, but I think it's there. And I think those concussion tests are there. But like you said, the mental health piece of this has to play a role. You have to look at certain situations, and I like to lean somebody that's going to be playing tonight who really struggled with basically his openness as a player, and that was Marshawn Lynch. If you go back and look at the Super Bowl, he was very, very uncomfortable in the public eye. I mean, almost like he was about to cry if you go back and look at that interview. And his teammates stepped in for him and made him feel very comfortable there. But, you know, what is that telltale sign? Not to say that he's suffering from a mental condition by no means, but what does that mean at this particular point in time? Why was he feeling that way? And those are some of the questions that you have to ask.
Well, absolutely, and you can go all the way back to Ricky Williams doing the interview with his helmet on. I mean, those types of things now have to come to the forefront. I mean, because we've seen this already. This is deja vu. We've seen this story before.
Yeah, that's kind of a funny memory to bring up about Ricky Williams, and that could be a story all to itself. But, yeah, it's finally getting to the point where it kind of stops being about football, even just briefly sometimes, and it starts to be about the individual and, you know, how can we get these kids help when they need it, and how can we try to fix this where it's not happening again?
Well, absolutely, and just to kind of throw this in as kind of a last point on my end, I think the NFL can position itself as a position of or an organization that really cares. And the situation that comes to my mind immediately is the situation with Wes Welker. I mean, the guy had two concussions in a matter of a few games, or may have even been three. And I know that, you know, and I don't know, Jeremy, if you plan to talk about his recent suspension, but with that being said, at what point does the NFL decide to take some ownership, especially in lieu of all of the lawsuits and in the wake of Junior Seau and in just numerous players? At what point now do you say we have to be an organization that puts people first? We have to be. If you have to say, wait a minute, Wes Welker, we know you're a great player, but, dude, you've had three concussions in the past many months. It may be time to start looking for a different career.
Yeah, I agree, Reginald. I mean, I'm looking at this. You must understand the mentality of a player at any level of professional sports. They have a gladiator and or warrior mentality. And, you know, I know this is probably not the best analogy, but you have to compare them just like you would someone that serves in the armed forces. I mean, you know, there is a mentality that goes along with this. And because they have such high, you know, tolerance to pain, and because of their that gladiator-type spirit that's in them, it's, at some point it will be no different in boxing. You know, you have a board of commissioners that determine on whether or not a fighter is going to be able to compete based on certain things that they see. And I do agree with you that, you know, I would rather see Mr. Welker walk away from this game healthy than to continue to try to force an issue, and then he ends up tragically with a lot of the trauma that you see. If you remember, this is what retired Troy Aikman, you know, so that, you know, the evidence is there, but clearly make a decision when he can't make that decision, and he's not going to make that decision for himself. But medically, if you got, you know, three or four neurologists all agreeing, or three out of four agreeing, or three out of five, or whatever number you like to use, make sure that you've done a thorough testing on him to see if it's a situation where he can continue this versus him trying to go back out there and, you know, another whack and he won't even know his name.
Yeah, as far as Wes Welker, I mean, he did test positive for amphetamines, which could have had something to do with why he gave away so much money at the Kentucky Derby. But apparently he tried to challenge it, protest it, whatever word they like to use, and it got shut down, and that's where we suddenly heard about it. He does have to serve his four games now, but having three concussions in 10 months is way too many in a short amount of time, as we've been talking about. I mean, at some point, does somebody really need to get in his ear and say, you need to just hang it up, man?
Yeah, and to Coach's point, I have to kind of agree with that, and that, hey, how do you tell a guy that he can no longer make a living for himself? And again, this all kind of goes back, and we could go round and round, but this goes back to even that rookie symposium. I mean, when are you getting these guys into camp and into discussions and saying, hey, guys, you're getting these multimillion-dollar contracts. Don't go out and spend half of it on jewelry and expensive cars. Put away, because you just never know what's going to happen. We have got to – the NFL has got to come up with something more along the lines of planning for life after the NFL. I think that's the key.
And believe it or not, Reginald, they do a good job of that. I think one of the things that you combat when you have – and this is where they have fixed that. The way they have fixed that for players financially is through this three-year rookie deal that they have. So that way they don't have this money to just throw away, because they're not making that type of money. But back to that point being at hand, prior to that, a lot of them don't seek this stuff out. You're talking about a lot of these kids who have never had that kind of money. The majority of them have never had that kind of money. But, again, when you're talking about how to plan your future, I think the reality has to be put forth from the agent's perspective as well, to make sure he educates his client. You know, the life expectancy is only 3.3 years. You might not make but two of those years. You might not make but one of these years. What's your goal coming out of this is the bigger picture, and that's what they should be looking at.
Right. So now, does regulation come into play? Because you and I both know that regardless of the rookie situation and the cap that's placed on the rookie's contract, you've got scavengers on the other side of the fence. These guys will spot these guys $2 million because of their potential or what they think their projected income is going to be, and that's going to put them in the hole. I mean, I think about Allen Iverson quite frequently. I mean, and this is off, you know, he's not a football player, but, you know, the guy went through 200 some odd million dollars, and the only thing that's going to save him, and only not till he turns 59, is that somebody was smart enough to say, hey, we're going to put $30 million of your money away in a trust. But what happens to, you know, during his pinnacle when all the scavengers had their hands in his pockets? So it's a broad conversation that probably required his own show. So I'll digress on that.
But point is well taken.
Yeah, I think maybe we should dedicate a show to that somewhere down the line. But for now, we'll go on to happier, greener pastures, so to say. Alex Smith gets a new contract extension. It is 4 years, $45 million. I don't know how much of it's guaranteed. I would imagine at least half of that. But to me, I hope he bought a steak dinner for the Red Rifle up in Cincinnati, because I think Andy Dalton deal is about 90% of the reason Alex Smith got a new contract.
Well, yeah, that would surprise me a little bit. And, I mean, again, I'm not a coach. I'll leave that part up to Coach Hill, who is. But obviously there is something that Andy Reid sees in Alex Smith that wasn't seen in San Francisco, and certainly there have been several examples, namely Mr. Drew Brees down in New Orleans. In fact, when he was in San Diego, he wasn't valued as much as he has been, and he hasn't shown the promise and shown the results as he has as Drew Brees has in New Orleans. But that being said, Andy Reid had to see something to okay this deal. That's a lot for Alex Smith. I mean, he manages the game well. He's safe, quote-unquote, but just not a guy that I think is worth that kind of money personally.
Yeah, I think, Russell, Coach decided to help push this deal through because he needs a good insurance policy, and I think Alex gives him that best opportunity in his offense. I think that's why it was pushed that way. Again, he's going to have to prove it this year. He's really going to have to prove it this year. And that's where it's going to tell you, you know, whether or not the money was well spent. You know, the owners, again, probably have a lot of clauses into this that if they don't like what they see down the stretch, the GM can get them out of this some type of way. But, again, it's a lot of money to put before him since he's already been proven already. Now he has to produce it consistently to even show that he was worthy of that type of salary.
And I stand corrected. The $45 million is actually the guaranteed part. It is 4 years, $68 million. Extends him through the 2018 season.
Wow. I mean, kudos to him and his agent for getting that money, but wow.
Yeah, I'm starting to think maybe he has Matt Flynn's agent.
I forgot about that contract. Absolutely.
Right.
Matt Flynn's agent has got to be my hero. He should be teaching marketing classes at the highest institutions, because it's nothing personal to Matt Flynn. It was no knock on him. It's just he got paid more money to sit on the bench 1 year than he did to actually play.
Yeah, and is he even on a roster now? I mean, again.
Late last season he was re-signed to the Packers, who, when Aaron Rodgers went down, couldn't find anybody that could win a game at quarterback for him, so they hired Matt Flynn. He took over a couple games. I think he went 2-2 down the stretch, and then Rodgers at 80% come back in and took him to the playoffs. They ended up 8-7-1, I believe, and won the tiebreaker of their division. So, yeah, he kind of halfway saved the last four games for him and long enough for Aaron Rodgers to go, I'll just tape my shoulder, I'll throw it with the other hand.
That's correct. That's exactly what happened.
Wow. Okay. Well, so be it. I mean, such is the business of the NFL, I guess.
Yep, absolutely. And as we talk, we go from one quarterback with an interesting scenario to the next. Ryan Mallett was traded from the New England Patriots, and he was traded to the Houston Texans for a conditional seventh-round pick. Now, to me, and Coach, me and you were talking about this earlier, to me that is basically New England saying we don't even care if we get anything back for him, correct?
That would be correct. When you're talking about conditional picks, it's basically saying you're giving me something with a future consideration, but, again, it's just a consideration. The fact that it's a seventh-round conditional doesn't say anything. And, as a matter of fact, it doesn't say much at all. It says that, you know, we had to get something for him, and we're okay with what you gave us because that's what we felt his value was to us at that point in time.
Right, I'll go with that with Coach Hill. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who was held in such high regard. I mean, just a few months back, he could be the next breakout superstar. But to be fair, we haven't seen him in a game that mattered since back at Arkansas, I believe he went to college. I mean, he come out with such high praise there. He was supposed to be Brady's successor, and then suddenly. Kind of last year, the trade talk started, but they wanted to keep him in case they made the Super Bowl. They ultimately did not. This year rolled around. He didn't really have a good preseason, and they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. And then out of nowhere, suddenly Ryan Mallett is shipped to Houston, where I don't really know where he falls with their quarterbacks because all of them kind of bring something to the table.
Yeah, again, I think it's an experiment. I mean, you know, sometimes a change of scenery just does the same. And I mentioned the aforementioned Drew Brees. I mean, when he was in San Diego and they drafted Rivers. I mean, he was just kind of that guy that they said, okay, whatever. And then the guy goes to New Orleans and lights it up. So, I mean, it could be just a gamble. Sometimes a gamble is worth it.
Yeah, again, I think what they're doing is padding their quarterback stable just in case if someone else needs a quarterback, they will have something to trade with. So I think, you know, you have to look at what teams, where teams are and then where teams' needs are. And so that's just kind of how they'll do all of the things that they have.
Yeah, because, right now Ryan Fitzpatrick is the starter in Houston. They've got Ryan Mallett penciled in as the backup, and then Tom Savage that they drafted this year as the third string. But of those three, Tom Savage had a great preseason. I mean, but, you know, it is what it is, and it's whoever fits the scheme and whoever fits the one they actually use, not the preseason numbers. But I kind of agree with you guys. They're kind of padding this because they know they're going to have to trade somewhere down the road and get other pieces, and this just gives them another piece on the board.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's exactly what it is. So they just have to kind of play the wait-and-see role and see what comes of it.
And on to the next kind of interesting story. We in a way, it kind of makes sense, but veteran of the league, James Harrison, has decided to retire. He played with Cincinnati and most famously the Steelers. He did have a physical that I believe he passed in Arizona, but Arizona really didn't have room for him. And I think ultimately his body's not holding up after all the banging around he does. And I think he made a good decision to retire and actually be able to enjoy his family.
Absolutely. I mean, I like to send a shout out to Mr. James Harrison. I think by all my counts on my end, he's a Hall of Famer. He played the game with passion. He played the game with integrity. Despite some of the issues people may have had with the fact that he was very blunt. However, he was a heck of a player. And I wish him luck in the future.
I agree. I think he has a body of work that's most definitely warranted of the Hall of Fame. The most important thing is that he left the game without being broken up, at least too bad. And that's the thing that I want to commend him on, that he stayed a fierce competitor for a very long time.
Yeah, he did. Like I said, I wish him the best, and I think he's been one of the smarter guys to know when to say when, even though he feels like he can play. It's good that he retires now so that he doesn't push it too far and end up probably on the other side of the concussion lawsuit that's coming.
Absolutely.
I agree.
But as we kind of roll towards the end of end zone and prepare for Falcon Zone, we are going to preview four big matchups and kind of give our picks on them. And then we'll jump into our Super Bowl predictions. I think it's just everybody else is kind of doing this, and I think it's kind of fun to throw it out preseason anyway, but we'll get to the Super Bowl in a minute. First big matchup happens here in about an hour or so as the Green Bay Packers go to Seattle to take on the Seahawks. How do you guys see this one shaking out?
Obviously, Seattle is probably the toughest place to play, especially coming off the fact that I believe they get their Super Bowl rings tonight. And just the 12 is going to be nuts in that stadium. I mean, given the fact that the center, look, God bless him, as Bruce Irving did say, he would be praying for him. The guy has not taken any snaps with Aaron Rodgers at any point in the preseason. I think the defense will mangle that offense, and I just don't think that Green Bay is going to stand a chance. I expect this to actually be a blowout.
It's going to be quite interesting. One thing about Green Bay is that they have, you know, although this guy might not have taken snaps in the preseason, trust me, he's taken a lot of snaps from Aaron. I think that Green Bay and with Aaron, it depends on how Aaron takes the game. Remember, I told you, he is a silent warrior. And they know that this is a game that they can earmark to bring themselves back, especially all of the injuries that they even suffered last year. I think that it's a lot more pressure on Seattle to win this game than it is for Green Bay to win this game. So if Seattle slips in any form or fashion, if they don't come out and jump Green Bay tremendously, I mean, to where they have this game pretty much sealed up by halftime, trust me, Green Bay is going to give them everything they can possibly stand because they stand on the basic fundamental principle that we'll just take it one play at a time.
Hey, Jeremy, guess what? I think you just
with
the first biased opinion from Coach Haywood Hill on Green Bay. I love it.
That would be true. I'm just telling you, you know, just knowing this organization the way that I do, they are quiet. They are the team that is very quiet, and because all of the hype is around Seattle. Watch them when they come out tonight, guys. They're quiet before the storm. They're going to come out just very lethargic. They're going to come out just kind of smooth. They're not going to get caught up in it. And you're going to see a different type of Seattle when they hit the field. But I promise you, once that ball is kicked and they have to, you know, the corner flip and the ball kicked and then possessions are taken, you're going to see a different type of Green Bay hit them in the mouth. Trust me.
So are you picking Green Bay, Coach?
Right.
Yes, I am saying that Green Bay will win this football game.
All right, there it is.
Well, I guess
only for only the third
breaker.
Time in two seasons at home for Seattle.
Yeah, but I see a couple more of those on their schedule this year. But that kind of tips my hand as too far as the way I see this. I think Seattle's not as good this year as they were last year. I'm not going to say they were lucky last year. They're not the pro version of Auburn, but I think that had Aaron Rodgers not missed seven games last year with a broken clavicle, and to me, he probably should have not came back in the rest of the season, but because of the Matt Flynn situation and the fact that nobody else could seem to win a game for him at quarterback, he come back in, plays wounded, wins the games, goes into the playoffs. I think if he doesn't get hurt, they probably lifted the Lombardi last year, but as long as he stays healthy, which I think is the biggest key, because they still have the same backups as they did last year, Matt Flynn and Scott Tolzien. As long as Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, they got a big run ahead of them. I got Green Bay in this game as well. I think they're going to go, and I think they, since they are as quiet a team as they are, I don't think they're going to have a problem with the crowd noise. So I got Green Bay in this one. But we'll skip to the next one. The Sunday night football game is the Indianapolis Colts at the Denver Broncos. Coach, who you got in this one?
I have to take the Colts in this one. I think that the Colts are a team now where they're very confident in what they have and Andrew Luck, and I think that they're going to pull this out. I don't think Denver is the team that they need to be without a Wells Walker, at least offensively for sure.
Wow. I absolutely take Denver in this game. I mean, Wes Welker is just one piece of this. I mean, you've got Bebe Thomas on one end. You've got Julian Thomas at the tight end. You've got Monty Bell coming out the backfield. And you got Peyton Manning. I mean, those four people alone, the score will be so high it won't even matter. I mean, yeah, Denver.
Wow, I'm shocked. One of the things I will say as a defensive coordinator, I'm not afraid of Peyton Manning anymore, because what people fail to realize is Peyton doesn't have the deep ball anymore. He just does not have that arm strength that he had, you know, when he was, you know, in his earlier years in, with the Colts. And so now that's why he needs the West Walker. He needs that dump factor. And he doesn't have that in that speedy slot guy anymore. He's going to struggle with that, trust me.
Yeah, but he has what's between the ears, and that's what 99% of the quarterbacks in this league doesn't have. So I'm with you. I mean, you picked Indy already. I'm going with Denver.
It is football season.
I say, wow, we're two games in, and you guys are already split. And I guess, Reggie, be figuring out who you want to challenge next week, because, you know, I threw out the challenge to Kurt Warner and to Deion Sanders, and Coach Hill just threw out a challenge to Peyton Manning, said he wasn't afraid of him. So, you know,
Absolutely. Be
thinking about who you want to call out next week, and, you know, the sky's the limit. I hear Joe Namath might need a throwing partner or something. So, but, God, I like Andrew Luck, I think, very much, as much as I hate to say that somebody's the next this or the next that, the next breakout quarterback as far as the next Peyton, Brady, Breeze, possibly even Matt Ryan, is Andrew Luck. It is between the ears. But I think Denver's got a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. You're only as good as your last game to a point, and their last game was one they want to forget. I think Indy's still rebuilding. I don't think they're quite ready to contend with what Denver's going to throw at them. I think it's going to be really, really close, but I actually got Denver in this game. And we'll save the fun game for last, but the second game on Monday Night Football is the San Diego Chargers at the Arizona Cardinals. Who you got in this one, Reggie?
This was a tough one. I had to think about it, but I'm going to go with Arizona. I like what they've done defensively. One of my favorite players all time is Mr. John Abraham. I think now that, you know, he has a chip on his shoulder, obviously. They have that revamped defense. You got Carson Palmer, who is now that guy that can get the rock to Larry Fitzgerald. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I think it's going to be close. But I still take Arizona on top.
All right, Coach.
I agree. I take Arizona. I mean, I like Arizona. I like where Arizona as an organization is going. If that division is not careful, very, very careful, you better watch out. Arizona will slip up and get there. I mean, they have all of the tools there. They have all of the elements and personnel there. They're young. They have the veterans in Abraham that is there as well. They can rally players around quickly. Watch out for Arizona, because they are a quiet team that can beat you all day if you're not careful.
Yeah, the quick answer is Arizona, and the quick answer to why is Andre Ellington. Why do I say his name? He's going to be the Eddie Lacy possibly of this year, as far as he's going to be the breakout sleeper. If you don't have him on your fantasy team, I urge you to go do that right now. But, yeah, because they're pretty even as far as when you match them up across the board, with a slight edge for sure going to the Arizona defense. And as we call them, the emerging second team, by far, Andre Ellington could be a top five running back within a couple weeks. But it's good that we're all Arizona homers, and we don't have to argue about this one. But it's kind of interesting we all agree on that particular one. But let's get into that last game before we get to our Super Bowl predictions, and that's the New Orleans Saints are going to be at the Georgia Dome this Sunday, 1 o'clock. Tailgaters will be out early. Against those Atlanta Falcons. And I feel like we're going to get a very unbiased answer, but I do want to start with you, Reggie, on this one.
Well, I won't even answer it because you already know who I'm going with. I'll make it easy.
Well, I saw that Drew Brees poster you had in your car. That looked very cool. I don't know where you got it, but yeah, I think we know where your allegiance lies for sure.
Absolutely.
Coach?
Yeah, I think that Atlanta is going to torch. Honestly, I think they're going to torch. I think they're going to torch New Orleans. I don't think New Orleans is going to stand a chance in this game. Nowhere, offensively or defensively. I think what they've been doing is holding them back and holding them back. And before you look up, Atlanta will probably win this game by at least 10 points. So just look for Atlanta to own all aspects of this game because they have a lot to do and a new facility they have to fill. Atlanta all the way in this game.
Wow. I think it comes down to two particular things. And after I say them and after I give my prediction, I will be very happy to say I will not tell anybody my whereabouts on Sunday, but I will not be near this game for other reasons. But it comes down to me, if, A, the Atlanta defense, as young as they are, some of the new pieces they have in play, if they could play as well as they did in the preseason. They had a couple hiccups, but I think if they could play well, this could really swing the game. The problem is some of those new pieces I'm not so sure of. I'm still not sure about Croy Bearman and some of those other ones. And Atlanta has never had an answer for Jimmy Graham. They may have shut him down a little bit here and there, but they've never been able – he's like the Tony Gonzalez of the Saints for sure. He eats up the middle of the field. And I think this one, as usual, is going to go to a nail-biting finish. You know, somebody's going to be 5 yards short or somebody's going to hit a kick at the end. But I'm actually going to go with the New Orleans Saints on this one just because I like Drew Brees and the way he's playing right now.
Well, you have my condolences.
As you know, I don't have a favorite team. I do like organizations, and I do think that this year they do have an answer for Graham. I think what you're going to see, and I said it earlier, as to why they were holding back a lot of their defensive schemes in the preseason, you're going to see this defense is going to look a lot like what the Baltimore Ravens when Ray Lewis was at his prime. They are going to be all over the place. And every time Graham touches that ball, or whoever might have the ball offensively, you're going to find two or three Falcons jerseys around the Bears' foot.
I'll say this. Not only do I challenge the Falcons to prove me wrong, because I would honestly, I don't have any love whatsoever for the New Orleans Saints. To me, the best answer that I would come up with for Jimmy Graham would probably be Prince Shimbo, because I think he will be – not only will he be like a hawk in the middle of the field, he gives up a little bit of height to him, but he can be physical. And if you start pushing Jimmy Graham around, he kind of likes to take the ball and go home. So if that happens, and Prince Shimbo, one of my favorite Falcons, for sure, favorite new Falcons, if he can match up or if they can put maybe Alford or somebody that can run toe-to-toe with him, you shut down Jimmy Graham, you're going to win this game.
I don't think it'll matter, but we'll see Sunday. 1 o'clock.
I think Brees is going to be surprised
will.
At how good the Falcons pass rush is going to be in this game. I don't think he's going to get that much time to get it, Graham, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. I agree, Coach.
Hey, like I said, I'd love Atlanta to prove me wrong, and I would be very happy to be wrong at this point. The way it looks right now from what I've seen in the preseason, I can't not pick the Saints right now. It could change by next week. But if the listeners aren't mad enough at me already, let's quickly jump into our Super Bowl predictions. I'll tease the end of zone trivia question, and then we'll roll right into Falcon Zone. Super Bowl predictions. Let's start with you, Coach.
I like on the AFC side, New England to compete this year. I think they proved they can play with anybody. On the NFC side, there are a couple of teams there, to be quite honest with you. I can't say one particular team, but I can give you what I feel are some of the teams in the hunt. I think Green Bay will be back there. I think Atlanta has a very strong shot at it this year. My sleeper team, believe it or not, is going to be the Carolina Panthers. I think they have a lot on that team. They look at their record from last year, and they've added pieces to the puzzle. So as long as they can keep Cam Newton healthy, you better watch out for Carolina this year as well.
All right, Reggie?
On the AFC side, I like Denver. I think that you know, I don't see a team other than New England that could compete with those guys, and I just think Peyton Manning is the difference on the AFC side. On the NFC side, I'm absolutely going to go with my Atlanta Falcons, and here's why. I mean, it's not just because they're my favorite team, but because one of the things that has held true for Atlanta is that when they are not on when they're not in the spotlight to be that team, that's when they perform. And right now, there is not a single analyst, a single network, a single person in Vegas that is giving them the shot. I think they are the guys that you're going to see a young defense that performs a lot like Seattle did last year. And I think that what's going to be missing now and what was missing last year that is not going to be missing this year is that Mike Smith is going to be forced to release the handcuffs. And I think that Atlanta's going to be that team that's going to end up in the Super Bowl.
So you're looking for your Falcons to get some revenge as far as Super Bowl against the Broncos then?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And John Elway can't do anything but sit in the box.
Yeah, you know, like I said, a lot of people have been giving their Super Bowl predictions over the last week, a lot of fellow media people and all, and I've actually had mine locked in for about a week in my head. I've tried to argue back and forth, and I can't convince myself otherwise, but I feel like Denver's going to take a step back, so I do feel that Brady's going to go to a Super Bowl. And I honestly, though, I have the Patriots losing to the NFC because I think the NFC is the strongest side for sure this year. And the team they're losing to are the Green Bay Packers. I think if Rodgers is healthy the whole way, like I said, they should have lifted a Lombardi last year. But when you break your clavicle, it's kind of hard to throw a football. If they can keep him upright for the entire season, I don't even think the Bears offense can keep up with them. I think Green Bay is going over New England in what should be probably one of the best star-studded media hype Super Bowls we've had in a while.
Again, you have my condolences.
You know, and we're throwing these out preseason. You know, as we kind of give some other predictions later in the year, you know, every quarter or so of the season, we can easily change these and go, well, based off what we're seeing now, there's this here and there's this here. It's going to be kind of fun to track this and see if some of these teams can prove us wrong, some of these question marks we have, or, you know, just to see if we're seeing it a different way than nobody else is seeing yet.
Well, then maybe what we do is we say we have a mid-season prediction as well.
Right. We'll definitely do that, just to see where we're at and see, you know, see if something's changed the way we've seen it over the course of the year. But, as I said, I will tease the in-the-zone trivia topic, and the topic will tie us right into the Falcon Zone show. The topic is Matt Ryan versus the Saints.
Wow.
I'll let you guys think about that. I'll let you guys think about that one pretty well as we slowly go into the break here. And we'll see you guys on the other side for Falcon Zone.
Jeremy, the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
And that's right, the Falcons on top, as Reggie had them in the last segment. And we all kind of agree they're going to do quite well this year. But that does bring us to Falcons Zone. I'm your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Haywood Hill, and Mr. Reggie Walker. How are we doing, guys?
Doing great, Jeremy.
Good.
Awesome. And right before the break, I teased the end-of-zone trivia topic, and that's Matt Ryan versus the versus the Saints. You guys ready for the question?
Absolutely.
Since, you know, Ryan was a rookie in 2008, since his rookie year, how many wins does Matt Ryan have against the Saints?
He has two.
I want to say it was three, but I could be wrong.
The answer is three. He is 3-9 against the Saints.
Wow, I can't believe I got it right.
So he is indeed a Falcon fan.
Correct.
This time I decided not to second guess my answer.
Yeah, that's true. The last few times you second guessed, you actually had the answer to start with and ended up changing it. But yeah, he is 3-9 according to the stat sheet I had pulled up earlier. And before Falcons fans start bashing me for saying, why aren't you bringing up this, or, you know, you're talking about how many playoff wins he has. No. I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback. Almost every one of these games have been a field goal or less deciding. So I just wanted to bring up to everybody that he has three wins. There's a possibility he'll get the fourth this weekend. But, like I said, that rolls us right into Falcon Zone. You know, let's start with the Jacksonville game. You guys get a chance to catch the game?
Absolutely. I did take a look at the game a couple times, actually.
Did you guys see the play I was talking about as we were doing the show last week? I told you two of the most unlikely people kind of having an altercation.
I thought I did. So tell me who was it, and then we can build on it from there.
It was the Matt Bosher penalty is the one I'm talking about. That and Ace Sanders. I've actually met Ace Sanders a couple times when I was down in Jacksonville last year, and the former Gamecock is one of the coolest, most laid back guys. And when they kind of got tangled up. And ended up going to the sideline. I saw the play, and I went, that's not a penalty, but there's going to be a flag on it. And there went the flag. First of all, do you guys agree with the flag? And second of all, what do you think about the whole altercation?
Well, I never agree with a penalty, but, you know, again, I like to see the feistiness. I mean, Matt Bosher, having met him personally, he's not a guy that's going to back down. He's out of the University of Miami, so he has – a different perspective on how football is played, even at the punter's position. And again, it's just one of those things that I think that if anything's going to plague Atlanta this year is the fact that they are trying so desperately to reestablish the fact that they are a tough team. You're probably going to see a tremendous amount of penalties against this team this year.
Yeah, I did get a chance to see that play, and I think, you know, you have to throw the flag just for the protection of players and to make sure that it doesn't escalate from that point forward, because it can start with something as simple as that, and then the next thing you know, every other player, some type of push, shove, smack upside the helmet type deal. So, again, what I did like about it is it did show the aggressiveness of the Falcons, and even down to the special team, they're not playing any games about when they step on the field to make sure that they get themselves acknowledged.
Yeah, I like the aggression, and that's exactly what I'll call it. You know, a lot of times people think kickers are just there to kick a ball, and it's really nice to see them make a play on a return. But at the time, Ace Sanders had a handful of returns, and he was kind of on his high horse about thinking he could just kind of dance around all he wanted. So it was kind of funny to see Bosher kind of put him in his place, and even Bosher on the sideline was just looking and shaking his head like, I make that play 100% of the time.
Absolutely. I mean, it was interesting to see, but again, I love to see that, and I'm okay with that kind of penalty.
I don't think he got any backlash from his coaches, or especially Coach Smith. I think he was kind of, you know, tickled to see, you know, I got my special teams guy right in the thick of things as well. He's buying into our toughness.
Well, what else did you guys take away from that Jacksonville game? I mean, obviously it was a win, but to me, that was more of the Falcons team that I expect for this upcoming season. And I felt that even though the Jaguars are emerging, I feel like they were able to keep them from really making big plays.
Well, I think that, more importantly, T.J. Yates established himself as the second quarterback. And I think that was the whole point of this game. I think they really wanted to see between T.J. Yates and Renfrow, which of the two was going to be placed as the number two quarterback. And I think that T.J. Yates did absolutely what was expected of him. He managed the offense well. He threw for 200-some-odd yards and a couple of touchdowns. And again, we saw that guy, Mr. Anton Smith, who catches a ball and goes to the house without any penalties. And I think that those are the types of plays that are going to surprise some teams this year and are going to win some games.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, again, you know, there's a lot that has, you know, that still has to come out of the first game. And I think the way that the NFL just in general has matched up a lot of these teams, you're going to see quickly what they're made of. So I think, again, Atlanta, when I'm seeing them offensively, is that they're going to be a fast-paced team. You're going to have to keep up with them. Don't be surprised when you start seeing some no-huddle threes out of Atlanta. Atlanta has a lot in the bag this year they're going to bring out. They're just going to be so non-traditional of your Falcon teams of the past.
Yeah, I think very much so. And the fact that they could go on the road, Everbank is not quite Seattle, but Everbank Field is an interesting little bowl. The sound as far as the way it carries. The Falcons, I noticed off of Hard Knocks, got a good look at the screen, and especially the four ladies that were in the pools that they kept showing on the screens. I believe they're famous now and trending on every major social site there is. But, they weren't distracted by the new frilly things going on in Jacksonville, and they were able to go on the road and pick up a victory. And like you said, T.J. Yates was able to establish that he's still very much the backup here.
Right, and I think he deserves it. I mean, the guy has played in a playoff game. He's played several games down in Houston. I thought he was ready. I think it was just a matter of him learning a playbook. And I think he showed in this Jacksonville game that he's perfectly capable of commanding the offense if, Lord forbid, Matt Ryan goes down for the year.
Well, one thing I'll say about Atlanta, I don't know if they kept all three of the quarterbacks that haven't looked at their final rosters yet, but if they did, they're not losing. It's so unique to find an organization that has three quarterbacks that are capable, and with two of them already being starters. So with Matt Ryan at the helm and then having Yates behind him and Renfrow behind that, if they were able to keep it, then you don't lose anything at that point. So you're really gaining ground.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And they did keep all three quarterbacks. Which to me, if you're Houston, I don't know if you go for Ryan Mallett. I think, given the scenario, I would go get Sean Renfrey if it was me. Possibly even anybody that could use a solid backup. Atlanta's going to have a high price because Renfrey could be the guy if Matt Ryan ever goes down and something happens to T.J. Yates as well. But overall, to me, this is a great showing. It helped determine who the 53-man roster was. Croy Bierman was able to hang on to it. I know we had question marks on that. Some of us still have question marks on that. But 24-14, I believe, was the score or something along those lines. A lot of good takeaways. I know the players had a good time. I know a lot of Jacksonville fans, and they were able to talk with some of the Falcons players, and they said they were, you know, nice, and none of them were snappy about everything. Everybody was real – real cool about everything. But we do have a special guest on the line. We're going to get him on here in a second. Reggie, do you want to do an introduction? I know you know him a lot better than we do.
Absolutely, absolutely. I would like to the special guest that we have is a member of one of the premier, if not the premier, Atlanta Falcons tailgate groups that we have across the city. I met Mr. Mark Cooper here a couple of years ago and got a chance to hang out with those guys down in New Orleans and as well as in Atlanta. We call him Big Sweet, and he is one of the founding members of the ATL Falcoholic tailgate group, and he wants to come on and just tell us about the tailgate that they have set up for on Sunday morning. down in the yellow lot and to get this Atlanta Falcons team and crowd ready for this big game that we have on Sunday.
I was about to say, without further ado, Bart, welcome on to Falcons Zone. Good to have you.
Oh, man, it's good to be here, man, and appreciate Reggie for the great intro. I don't think I could have done it better myself. But,
absolutely.
As you know, week one NFC South Division game against that arch-rival New Orleans Saints, things are, you know, pumped. And we got some big things in store Sunday. You know, like Reggie said, we're one of the best, if not the best, tailgate crew, man. You know, we do what it takes to get people, you know, ready to rise up and tear the roof off the dome, man, and bring the Falcons to victory. So, you know, Sunday morning, 9 o'clock in the yellow lot, man. You know, if anybody's around to come check us out, you know, we never meet a stranger, and we have you ready for the game.
Yeah, definitely. You guys are getting started. I don't know if this is early or not. I haven't been able to tailgate a whole lot in my lifetime, but you guys are starting at 9 o'clock. Is this pretty standard procedure, or are you guys starting early for week one?
Well, no, we start at 9 o'clock because our tailgate crew mainly season ticket holders. So we get you ready to go in the game. We shut it down about 30 minutes before kickoff so we can go get in the game because we come for the game. We party hard, but we're there for the game. But when we go in, we still have a couple TVs left out for those who can't get in or just like to watch it outside. So,
and Jeremy, to that point, I'll add that one of the best experiences I've ever had was last year going down to New Orleans and going down on Bourbon Street. And the ATL Falcoholics had actually taken over an entire club.
Oh, wow.
Not just a spot, an entire club. And there had to be well over 200-300 Falcon members in there partying, getting ready for the game. It was a great experience, very good family fun. I won't say family fun because it's not meant for everybody. But these guys are a class act. I had an opportunity to do a tailgate with them last year where we brought in Mr. Chuck Smith and Bob Whitfield and Jamal Anderson, and we turned the yellow lot out. So for those people that are available, please come out and hang out with the ATL Falcoholics and get ready for this massive game that we've got against our arch rival New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, that's really rolling deep. If you can go down to New Orleans and take over one of their establishments, that's a rough place to be if you're the opposing team.
Well, absolutely, and the love that they showed, I mean, again, they were embraced. They don't turn away anybody. So even if you should happen to be a part of the opposing team, it was all love, and it was just one of those groups that, you know, again, they personify what football and love of football is about. You know, they are Falcon fans, and they make that clear. It's a class act. It's a class act. And for anybody that can get down, Jeremy, I know you can't get down, but Coach Hill, if you can, I think it's a great experience.
Like I said, don't meet a stranger. And, you know, if y'all in town anytime, come check us out in the yellow lot. You'll probably hear my voice before you see us, but just follow the sign when you get there. And Reggie, we'll be back to do the party at New Orleans again in December.
And I will be there, sir. I have already reserved my room right there on Bourbon Street, so I will be there.
Wow. All
right, we look to see you there, man.
And I'm looking forward to catching one of those tailgate parties. Thank you again for the upfront for the invite.
Anytime, guys.
Yeah,
thanks for having
me. Yeah, thanks for the invite. While we still have you on the line here, a few quick things before I was going to let you go. Tell everybody a little bit about what you guys do for the tailgate. Because a lot of people think it's just a bunch of people with a grill and loud music, and it's so much more than that.
Well, yeah, our basis is, man, you know, it's like I tell everybody, we give you a good dose of Dirty Bird, a heap of helping to rise up, and we keep it crunk all day long. So you got the guys on the grill, you got to have the good bar, but it's what you do with it. You got to get that spirit going. You got to get you a couple chants in there. You may hear a rap song or two about the Falcon freestyle. You never know who will stop by, man, and it gets you ready. Some people just go with the loud music and just stand around and act like it's a cocktail party, but we really, truly get you ready to go in there. When the tailgate ends, if you're not going to the game, you're going somewhere to find your pickup football game to play.
Well, and you know what, Jeremy, the other thing I would like to add that I was very impressed with the ATL Falcoholics is that they are very much embedded in the community. One of the events, particularly the event where Chuck Smith and those guys came through, the ATL Falcoholics was sponsoring a coat drive for the community where they just had all of their participants bring in coats. They had a rack set up outside, and they encouraged all of their patrons to bring their coats. And Chuck Smith even, you know, brought a few coats, and those guys really participated in that event. So they're doing things for the community as well. It's not just about a good time. It's about taking care of Atlanta, and that's kind of one of the things that they have that a lot of the Falcon tailgates that may not necessarily have. They may be about a good time, but the Falcoholics, the ATL Falcoholics, are definitely about servicing the community.
Yes, and to that point, Reggie, we will be continuing with the coat drive this year. We always say we tailgate with a purpose. Breast cancer is a big event. You know, the month of October for breast cancer, you know, we do a big thing for that also. But one thing that we're looking for this year, we still haven't finalized yet, but we're going to take a portion of our proceeds each weekend to we have about three or four charitable organizations we've narrowed it down to, proceeds from what we receive at tailgates. We're going to do that all season long because, it's the community. It's what brings us all together. So we want to let everybody know we are tied to the community. It's just not about partying. You know, it's about really coming together and uplifting others.
And how can people find out more about you guys? Are you guys on Facebook, Twitter, things like that?
Yeah. We got social media covered. You know, if you're on Facebook, you can find us at facebook.com/ATL Falcoholics, you know, just one word. On Instagram and Twitter, it's ATL_Falcoholics.
All right, that's awesome. And last thing before I let you go, do you have any good stories about Reggie that you can actually say on live radio?
Probably not.
Thank you, Big Sweet. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah. Always, discussion is a must.
That is awesome, and Mr. Mark Cooper of the ATL Falcoholics, we do appreciate you coming on with us, and look forward to coming to tailgate with you guys sometime this year.
All right, guys, thanks for having me, man. Let's get ready for kickoff.
All right.
And as I said, that was Mark Cooper of the ATL Falcoholics, great friend of Reggie's, and soon to be great friend of ours, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
It sounds like an awesome time. He sounded like a really awesome dude. Appreciate him calling in. Let's try to get through a couple of things real quick before we get out of here. I don't know. Reggie, are you ready for the new debut of something, or do you want to preview the next week's game first?
No, I'm absolutely ready, whenever you're ready.
All right, well, then we will quickly debut a new segment on this. A new segment we have here called we're going to walk the line with Reggie Walker. So basically it's your segment to do what you want to do with it, actually. So without further ado, let's walk the line with Reggie Walker.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Jeremy. My inaugural Walk the Line is an open letter to the comrade, Mr. Thomas Dimitroff. Mr. Dimitroff, I have a parable to offer you. If you know better, you do better. Again, if you know better, you do better. I will start off with a little Falcons history. In 1998, during the Falcons' run to the sole Super Bowl game of our 48-year history, the Falcons' defense had a total of 38 sacks while giving up only 3,581 total passing yards and an astonishing 29 total touchdowns. Since that year, the closest they have ever come to those numbers were during the 2004 season, where Jim Mora, where they went 11-5 and barely lost to a dominant Eagle team in the NFC Championship. In 2007, enter John Abraham, who during his tenure with Atlanta had 64.5 sacks of a total 178 over a six-year period. That's 40% of your sacks coming from one individual player. Well, in 2013, you decided to cut ties with Mr. Abraham for cap reasons, lack of production, character issues, etc., to which you then go and pay Mr. Osayuma-Yura the same comparable dollars, and we get a decent 7.5 sacks. By the way, I might add, you had the opportunity to sign both Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett for less, who had 8 and 8.6 sacks respectively. Well, guess what, Mr. Dimitroff? To add insult to injury, in 2013 at Arizona, John Abraham had 11.5 sacks in only 8 games played. Not necessarily the kind of quality that we expected. All water under the bridge at this point, but going into the draft in the offseason, you knew that the pass rush was an extremely close second to the offensive line as your priority. While I think that Jake Matthews will be a stalwart for us in his career, you had the opportunity to move up and draft possibly the most dominant pass rusher this game has seen in quite some time. Well, you didn't, and that was okay because you obviously had another plan. Falcons Nation's waited, relatively patient, and in a wait-and-see mode. At this point, I want to bring to note two numbers, 8 and 3. 8, the number of total sacks the entire Falcons defense had in the preseason, and 3, the number of total sacks Michael Sams had alone in the preseason. Once again, you had the opportunity to right the ship and take a guy that has outplayed every option we've had with far less reps. And once again, much like Abe's situation, you dropped the ball. Am I saying that Sam is a Hall of Famer? Absolutely not. Am I saying that Sam would have posted John Abraham's numbers? Absolutely not. What I'm saying is you've taken gambles that were far less successful and had far more risk and come up blank. No pun intended. We don't want the media attention. Well, why commit to Hard Knocks? We're afraid of the potential locker room issues. Well, at least Mr. Sam had actually admitted to his preference. What about those probable hundreds of players that haven't? As a dedicated fan, I am simply asking you and Smitty to please read up on the strategy of taking calculated risks and close the Bible of signing washed-up big-name players with great character. Winning teams have a mixture of youth, veterans, and not-so-nice guys, and with lights-out defenses, I might add. We will never win the Lombardi playing Smitty Ball with a team full of choir boys. Please see the Seattle Seahawks for any reference needed. This is Reggie Walker, and I have just walked the line. Back to you, Jeremy.
Wow, I think I picked the right tape talk for that. I think for sure we're walking a good line. I think you just walked a great line right there. But you know, that's definitely a segment we will be featuring throughout the season for sure. And maybe the right people heard that because I'm definitely right on board with practically everything you said. I don't know how you feel about it, Coach.
Very well spoken. I mean, I feel like I'm in the military, right, Jim?
Yeah, that's why, we talked about bringing that segment on and everything. I was like, yeah, very much turn the floor over to you. Me and Coach are going to stay out of it, let you say what you want to say and get your point out there. And like I said, hopefully the right people hear it. And I know that the Atlanta Falcons, especially Mark from the Falcoholics there, I think he's going to enjoy that one.
Yeah, I agree.
I appreciate you giving me the opportunity, Jeremy, for speaking my piece. I mean, I think it just goes without saying. I mean, we obviously have pass rush issues, and sometimes at some point our organization has got to take calculated risks. I mean, if you're going to risk your numbers and your dollars and you're not getting better at certain positions, and this is, again, I want to state this. This is not a knock on O.C. Uemura or anybody else, Steven Jackson, that we brought into the organization that we paid, I think, a tremendous amount of money to come in and make a difference. This is simply just a cry out from the fan base, and this is something that I've done a lot of research on and talked to a lot of fans. We are tired of mediocrity. We can't continue to talk about winning a championship when we're not making the calculated risk. And I think Seattle proved that, and I think they proved it with a team that wasn't a name or a group of big names. I think they started with a coach that believes that, guess what, if we bring the right players in and speak the right vision, we're going to do whatever it takes. And I just plea out to Dimitrov and to Mr. Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, to do those things, and I think we'll be fine. We'll be hoisting that trophy soon enough.
Well, I was able to recently read a book by the coach you mentioned there, Pete Carroll, that he wrote a handful of years. I think he wrote it right as he was taking the Seahawks job, but it was kind of his life up to that point. And he talks about his coaching philosophy in there, and I'm not going to give it away. Everybody should look this book up. If you catch me somewhere, I'll probably have it on me. I'll let you read it. But when you read his philosophy and you go back and look at the USD team, you go back and see what he's done with Seattle here, I mean, it all makes sense. And like you said, he's taken a lot of non-household names and pretty much made them household names because of their success. And in no way am I saying that one's better than the other or nothing like that, but I do think Atlanta could learn a lot of things from other people in the league.
Oh, absolutely. I think at this point, and this is why I feel so strongly about my Super Bowl pick on End Zone, is that Atlanta, and Coach Hill and I have had several conversations about this, Atlanta does not have an issue with lack of talent. Atlanta has an issue, in my opinion, with a coach who likes veterans. He likes veterans, and he likes complete control. Yes, he has won. Yes, he has taken us to the playoffs. Yes, he has done all of these things. He probably has the highest percentage of any Atlanta Falcon coach going forward. But I think where he hurts us is that he does not have that go all out mentality that you need when you have a group of young men who do not have the impressions of veteran teams. This defense has the ability to be great. Why? Because they don't know failure at this level. They don't know failure at this level. You have to let them do what they do. And in order to let them do what they do, it has to start with trusting guys like Mike Tice, trusting guys like Brian Cox, trusting guys like Mike Nolan, trusting guys like Dirk Cutter. You have to let them do their job. And I think that if Mike Smith takes the handcuffs off his coaches, you will see an Atlanta Falcons team that will dominate and that will hoist that Lombardi trophy come next year.
Well, I can't disagree, Russ. I think that one of the things that he learned was when they played Seattle and San Francisco in those back-to-back playoffs and conference championship games where they were ahead in those games and should have, you know, definitely won those football games. So I think he's had an opportunity to see that and reflect on it. I don't think that mistake is going to be made again.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I was just concurring with Coach Hill.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those, we're just going to have to wait and see where they go with this. If they end up with the season I think they're going to end up with, which is going to be quite successful, but I feel like if they don't make a deep enough playoff run, maybe a future walk the line could be addressed to their new head coach. And that's not a threat to Smitty, especially after I got to meet the guy. He's a super nice guy. He's done a really good job here, but I feel like he's hit the glass ceiling with as far as he can take them. I feel like they would go in a different direction. But as we said earlier in the show, we did kind of go over New Orleans at Atlanta this weekend. You guys both have Atlanta in this one, and I guess so I'm not the homer pick. I picked the Saints just because I want to be proven wrong. If you get a chance, we had on Mark Cooper from the ATL Falcoholics, one of the premier tailgating groups out of Atlanta. They are in the yellow lot, correct?
That is correct. They will be in the yellow lot near the urinals, actually. they wanted to keep it close to the fans and have to walk too far to relieve themselves.
hey, that is very strategic and very – I commend their effort for that, because there's nothing worse than being at a tailgate and having nature call and knowing that you have a three-mile hike to help yourself out. But if you get a chance to go down to tailgate this weekend, definitely try to look for Mark and the ATL Falcoholics, and our very own Reggie Walker should be down there. So you can meet him, get his autograph. I hear he signs any check with his name on it. And, and you know, if you you know, as long as Reggie's cool with it, go by and you know, Instagram or tweet us a picture of you hanging out with Reggie, and we'll put it up on the show site and maybe get you a fan club going.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, I would absolutely welcome that.
But and if you do want to find us, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at TheImpact99. The show site is at 3endzone. If you want to find Reggie, it's at Atlian, correct?
Atlian 73.
Okay. And we're working on getting Coach's Twitter up and going, and so he can drop some knowledge on us as well. You can find us on Facebook, or you can email the show, 3endzone@gmail.com. You guys got anything else you wanted to add before we get out of here?
Well, for the fans, I just want you guys to know that I will have a full-length cutout of Jeremy, the Impact York, out there with me. So you won't just be taking a picture with me. You'll take a picture with Jeremy. And for those ladies out there, yeah, he is a humdinger.
Welcome
wow.
to the world of
yeah,
being a celebrity, Jeremy.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I'm going to have to start bringing more than one Sharpie with me when I go places. But, yeah, look, if you catch any of us out somewhere, tweet in a picture of us or our Instagram. We don't have a show Instagram yet. We're working on that. But that is going to wrap it up for us. Appreciate Mark Cooper from the ATL Falcoholics calling in. It was great talking to him and hearing about all the awesome, you know, just tremendous things they do. But for Mr. Reggie Walker and the coach Haywood Hill, I am Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week.
Rise up.
It's football.